there are things out there. Creatures, monsters, ghouls and spirits. Beings that fall outside the realm of visible truth, beyond the confines of our basic reality. They lurk in the dark, haunt the recesses of our minds, and stir our curiosity in the unusual and weird. They are taboo topics, stories that we tell around the campfire and folklore passed down from our ancestors. We've been taught that these things don't exist, that they are merely myth and legend. Or are they? Welcome to the Occult Archives. I'm your host and spooky librarian, E.M. Moon, but feel free to refer to me as E. Here lies a space beyond all spaces, a library full of arcane information enough to drive any normal person mad. If you can think of it, if you can question it, the archives probably have what you seek. The story in this episode contains a scene involving assault, attempted sexual assault. It is not overtly graphic in nature, but that doesn't mean that it couldn't affect those that are sensitive to the subject. If themes such as this are triggering for you, please advise. 667 Children of the Beast, Issue Number 2, Activation. This issue is dedicated to my Adam. Thank you for rescuing me and never giving up on me. You're one of the biggest reasons I keep fighting. Violet Eve, June 4th, 2016. My cab pulled up in front of the Cat's Meow, and I slid my new Visa card through the credit card reader the cabbie handed me. I signed for the payment and exited the car in front of a karaoke bar with a line halfway down the street. Using my phone, I dialed Missy's number, but when she answered, I could barely hear her. "Vi, are you here?" Missy raised her voice over the yodeling sounds of a man singing a popular Guns N' Roses song. "Yeah, but the line is halfway down the block. It'll be a minute before I get in there." I watched as a few of the people in line stopped to gawk at the awkwardly dressed Irish girl that was practically standing in the middle of the road. "No, it won't. Give me a minute and wait outside the exit door," Missy instructed me as the receiver abruptly clicked. I nervously stepped up on the curb and waited alone by the exit door. This afforded me even more stares from the people in line. I'm sure they were assuming I would hop the queue, and I guess their assumptions were correct. The left door opened and Missy's beautiful blonde head peeked through. "It's all right, Alfonso. She's with me." Missy winked at the bouncer by the door, and he gestured for her to sneak me in. But the queue had seen this and groaned audibly, hurling insults my way because I got in when they couldn't. Lovely greeting from the Americans. Whatever happened to Southern hospitality? "You're finally here," Missy squealed as she jumped up and down. She looked way different since the last time I had seen her. Granted, it had been almost 10 years, but I didn't expect her to change this much. She had always been a dancer. From the day I met her, it was leotards and ballet flats that soon evolved into tutus and point shoes. But the look she had now was something else entirely. Now she was wearing a skin-tight cheetah print dress, heels that made her tower over my short frame, and what appeared to be hair extensions in her bleached blonde waves. I'm here," I smiled awkwardly, but I felt really out of place. The bar was loud, louder than the cock and crow during rugby season, which was surprising. A woman was now singing a terrible karaoke cover of Barracuda, and all I wanted to do was put myself in a corner, far away from all the noise and drunken singing. "Comfortable?" Missy smiled at me across the table. The table. In the corner of the room. Far away from everyone else. Yeah, I nodded, scanning my surroundings. Hadn't I just been at the front door of the bar? Maybe I was just so jet-lagged that I didn't realize we had moved to a table occupied by three other women. "This is Candy, Chandra, and Christina." Missy introduced me to the ladies sitting with us at the table. All of them were augmented in some way, wearing similar dresses to Missy with equally big hair. "Hello, I'm Violet." I introduced myself, trying to remember which C name went with which shade of blonde, sitting in front of me. "Missy has told us all about you," the C in the middle gushed. At least I think she was gushing over me. I hope Missy had told her new friends about her awesome childhood best mate. Awesome being the variable in that sentence. "All good, I hope," I grinned, shrugging my shoulders slightly in anticipation of their answer. "Oh yes, all good. She told us you're an author?" It was now the C on the left who spoke. "A writer. I don't really consider myself an author yet. I tended to get overly humble when I spoke about myself. I was my own worst critic after all." "You've had books published," Missy pointed out, taking a sip of the mimosa in front of her. "Self-published," I argued. "Just take the compliment, Vi." Regardless, she's good. Look her up, Violet Eve. Missy tried to sell me to her friends, but I wasn't sure if they were buying. What? Really? C on the right exclaimed as she cocked her head to one side. You wrote the Ghost Prophecy series. She pointed at me with the biggest smile on her face. I was really surprised. No, baffled, that she'd even read my books. I personally thought they were rubbish. I tended to not really like anything that I wrote, yet I kept on writing it. Maybe I wasn't that terrible after all. I did, I smugly replied. Wait, she didn't say she liked it. I fucking love that series. When does the fourth book come out? C on the right leaned over the table, a slight excitement in her brown eyes. I'm sort of working on it right now, part of why I've moved this way. I'm taking Felicity to the States for an investigation into something. I'm hoping being here will give me some ideas. I grimaced. I'm sure I sounded like I had no idea what I was even talking about, and I didn't. You'll find plenty of ghost history here in New Orleans. I have been on so many ghost tours since we moved into the city. Super spooky. Missy finished off her mimosa and hollered out to a man with cat ears on. He wandered off and promptly returned with a serving tray full of tequila shots. I fucking hate tequila. Makes me queasy just thinking about it. Even the smell made me want to vomit. Tequila shots all around! Missy shrieked as she slid shot glasses across the table to each of us. To Violet, Middle C raised her glass, and the rest joined in. I reluctantly lifted my own, clinked it against theirs, and when they threw their heads back to take their shots, I threw mine over my shoulder and prayed that it didn't soak anyone. This went on for quite a while. Missy kept ordering shots, and everyone kept taking them. Everyone except me. Eventually, I had to get the waiter's attention and let him know that I wanted water in mine, and told him to leave out the lime. When he came back with the next tray and Missy saw that some didn't have any limes, I lied and said that those were mine because I didn't like limes. I love limes. I thought you liked limes. Missy was starting to slur her words as she propped an elbow up on the table, her shot glass dangling from her fingers. Nope, can't do citrus now. Gives me heartburn. I lied, hoping that she'd believe me. But tequila doesn't? Apparently Missy wasn't as drunk as I thought, so I gave in. I haven't been drinking the tequila. I think that the ficus behind me is probably knackered right now. I was totally embarrassed. Missy and I were exactly the same age, yet here I was, sober as a granny, and Missy was drunk in a skimpy dress and perfectly manicured nails. Vi, you should have just said you didn't want to drink. I wouldn't have been offended. Missy seemed to understand. I hate tequila, and I'm just too jet-lagged to drink. I had a really bad nightmare on the plane and apparently slept the whole trip here. I scooted closer to Missy, so the three C's didn't overhear my crazy talk. We need to find you a doctor, Vi. This isn't normal. Missy rubbed my back out of sympathy. It's just stress. All of this has been stressful. Losing Mum, losing my scholarship, my home. It didn't start to get bad until then, I explained. I wasn't going to any doctors. I hated them. Mum hated them. And for good reason. Why don't you go home and get some rest? I have a spare key already made. Missy pulled a yellow key with bumblebees on it from her purse and placed it in my hand. Address? I didn't even bother to argue. I was exhausted. I'll text it to you again. Missy whipped out her phone and began furiously typing away. I forgot she had sent it to me earlier. I shouldered my messenger bag and stood from my seat. Is it far? You're leaving? I had lost track of the C's at this point and just nodded in their general direction. I didn't really want any more conversation. She's had a long flight and wants to get some rest, Missy answered her before turning back to me. Not even a 20-minute cab ride. I said my quick goodbyes and hurried out the front door of the bar to face people standing in line that had been there since I arrived. Some sneered at me, obviously recognizing me by my unruly ginger hair. I sheepishly covered my face with my hand and bustled up the street, completely forgetting to hail a cab. I'd only made it up a few blocks before I realized that the people of Bourbon Street had dwindled to flickering street lamps and shady alleyways. There were no cabs to hail now, so I guessed walking was my only option at this point. I passed several homeless people begging for change, but my loose money wouldn't do them any good. My phone had finally gotten good enough reception to GPS Missy's address. I was too far in one direction to turn back for a cab now. A ferry? I have to get on a damn ferry. A little boat blinked on the route, right at the edge of the Mississippi River. New city? New experiences. I tried to psych myself up for the trip across the river. I was about as fond of boats as I was of planes. I looked both ways before crossing the road and headed down Canal Street, where I knew the ferry terminal lay. There were just as few people on this route as there had been on the walk down here, but the faces I did see were far from kind. "Hey, darling, looking for a good time?" A man appeared out of nowhere with a fistful of tiny plastic baggies. Each one contained a blue dust that was supposed to be this good time that he was offering. No, thank you. I nervously declined, trying to sidestep him and continue down the street. "I didn't mean the drugs," he blurted, and roughly seized me from behind. I tried to scream as he yanked me under an awning with picnic tables and flung me up against one. "Please, please don't hurt me," I pleaded. My heart was racing as the man drew a knife from inside his jacket and held it at my throat. "If you keep that pretty little mouth shut, maybe I won't." He pushed me back against the table and spread my legs apart with his knee. Now was not the time for me to play the damsel in distress, but he had a weapon and I had effectively nothing. I clenched my legs reflexively as he tried to pry them open again. He was starting to get frustrated that I wasn't complying and pressed the knife harder against my throat. I could feel the skin tear as the sharpened blade effortlessly sliced across my skin, but just deep enough for me to cry out. "Let's play nice now, princess," he hissed, leaning in over me. He smelled like booze and bad hygiene. The scent made my eyes water. "Get off of me," I growled, a sudden primal urge to survive rising up in my gut. I raised a knee and caught the man right in the groin. He howled loudly, gripping his manhood with one hand while the other still held the knife. I tried to make a run for it, but his stumbling frame tripped me, and I came down hard on the concrete. Ugh! My knees cracked against the pavement as I practically fell on my face. In my hurry to get up and away from the man that surely wasn't trying to give me a warm welcome to New Orleans, I got the heel of my boot caught in a drainage grate and went back down again. "You little bitch," the man growled and jerked me up by my hair. I was finally able to let out a good long scream before he dragged me back under the awning into the shadows and slung me over another rusty table. I blacked out. I couldn't struggle anymore. I was already so tired from the flight, from the dreams, from all the stupid stress that I had been under for the past 6 months. I just decided to tune it out and hope that I somehow survived. I decided that instead of going to my happy place, a peaceful mental destination to try and detach myself from reality, I would write myself out inside my head. It was something I had done since a child, escapism. It was part of what got me into storytelling and writing in the first place. This one might have been my final story. I imagined that I was stronger than my meter and a half self, and I was able to fight his advances. I could feel his hefty body weighing down on mine as he still held the knife to my throat. The clanking of his belt buckle as he unhooked it caused my mind to wander to another story. Maybe I would play the damsel in distress after all and wait for my knight in shining armor to save me. I'd never known chivalry before, and surely wasn't going to now. "So sweet. So perfect. Such a pity I can't keep you," he purred, sliding the knife from my throat to the flannel shirt I wore. He popped two buttons with the blade before dragging it across the skin of my chest. I snapped out of my daydream long enough to instinctively struggle underneath him, but he wasn't having any of that. He backhanded me across the face, causing me to see stars in the dim light. I groaned as I tried to regain my composure, but the man had already gone back to popping the buttons on my shirt. I tried to meekly call for help, but I knew it wasn't going to do me any good. "Now, this may hurt a little." His gruff words were right in my ear. I braced for whatever was coming, letting myself fall back into the fantasy story I had fabricated in my head. I felt his hand slide down the front of my shirt as I let my mind wander to someone, anyone, who could come and save me. I had just felt his fingers find the button on my jeans when he let out a loud cry and then a gurgle. My eyes had been squeezed shut in anticipation, but the sound of the man in pain made them pop open. The would-be assailant was slumped over the picnic bench. It looked as if his neck had been crushed by a gorilla. I fought the urge to scream when I saw him. Another him. My knight in shining armor. "Shh, it's okay." He was much taller than my assailant had been, but he was standing in the shadows and the street lamp couldn't reach his face. Was he going to try and hurt me too? A gloved hand reached out into the beam of light, offering to help me. "I'm not going to hurt you, but we need to go." His deep New Orleans accent was almost soothing. Is he dead? I stuttered, reaching for this man's hand, even though I didn't know him from Adam. Considering I crushed his windpipe, I would say so. He took my hand and led me back out to Canal Street. I could finally see the face of my knight and everything else about his towering figure. He had to be easily over 6.5 feet, with thick chocolate waves that were pulled away from his shapely bearded jaw. His eyes were too dark in the low light for me to tell what color they were, but they were almost cat-like in shape. His lips were more of a distraction than I would have figured, and I quickly looked away to take in the rest of him. He wore a heavy hooded cargo jacket over a black tee with baggy camo pants. It was June, in the South. He must have been burning up. And he had on gloves as if he was waiting for a snowstorm, or preparing to knock off a petrol station. "Aren't you hot?" I blurted rudely, not exactly the way I had planned on saying thank you. "Miss, I'm always hot," he responded, fanning himself with his jacket. I was becoming a little hot myself. "Sorry, that was rude of me. Thank you. Thank you for saving me." I immediately became self-conscious and averted my eyes to my combat boots. "No problem. What the hell is a girl like you doing out on Canal Street at..." He checked his wristwatch. "Almost midnight." Now he sounded like he was scolding me for making him have to be chivalrous at midnight on a Saturday. "Does it sound like I'm from anywhere around here? I have no idea what this city is like." Maybe I shouldn't have been letting some stranger know how much of a foreigner I really was. He could have killed me where I stood and no one would miss me because I was green to this city, to this country. "Touché. We don't need to stand around here talking, though. If someone sees us and a dead body, they're going to ask a lot of questions." He took my hand once again. "We can't just leave the scene of a crime," I protested, trying to take my hand back. "You really want to wait for the fuzz to arrive and then have to answer a bunch of questions as to why that man's throat is crushed? Because I won't stick around for them so they can arrest me. Besides, one less scummy fuck on my streets. He was going to rape you." The last two words of his sentence made me draw in a sharp breath. He was right. He was going to do it right there, out in the open, without a care in the world. He probably would have slit my throat after, and I would have just ended up another casualty of the city. "You coming?" I had been so engrossed with my thoughts that I hadn't realized he was still waiting for me. "Yeah, let's go." I let him take my hand again and lead me back up Canal Street the way I'd come. I wasn't going to ask where he was taking me. I didn't care at the moment. The magnitude of the situation had just hit me and I began to shake. He took his jacket off without a word and draped it over my shoulders. "You're going to be okay. You'll realize soon enough that this city isn't always forgiving. But good people do exist," he reassured me. He was right. Good people did exist, and he was clearly one of them. Adam Bardeen. The gloves Henri had made for me seemed to be working. He said they were made out of a combination of Nomex and leather and had been inscribed with some sort of veve to keep the heat contained within me unless I chose to use it. I never chose to use it. It may have been the beginning of June in my city, but I was cloaked in a heavy jacket and gloves just so I could go DJ at some nightclub that hired me for the week. I could actually touch the vinyls now and not have them warp and melt in my hands, but the heat inside of me was getting worse. I could have taken my bike to work, but I decided to walk. Walking always did my head well when it was in a bad place. I couldn't wait to get away from Bourbon Street and back home. Henri had taken me in. He didn't like the apartment I was living in any more than Nate did and offered me a room above the shop. I was more than glad to take it. Since I decided to walk, it meant taking the ferry back home in the dark. It didn't usually run this late, but I knew the boat captain and he was out at the terminal most of the night anyway. I was getting ready to cross onto Canal Street when I heard it, a woman screaming in the distance. Sadly, that wasn't uncommon in the city, but something about this one made my heart skip a beat. How could a random scream sound so familiar? I needed to save whoever this was from whatever was hurting her, and I felt a sense of urgency to get it done quickly. There was just the one scream, but I felt like it still echoed off the buildings, and I followed the frantic panic that was palpable in the air. I crossed the street finally and was coming down the road pretty quickly when I saw her. The street lamp cast just enough of a glow where she was pinned against a picnic table, making her vibrant red hair almost neon in the dark. Then I saw the glint of the knife as it ran down her chest. I didn't have time to mull the situation over in my head. I had to act, and I had to act now. Bounding down the hill to the pavilion as quietly as I could, I came up behind the man that was about to harm an innocent woman. My hand shot out to his shoulder and incapacitated the arm that held the knife. He spun around as quickly as he could, but he wasn't fast enough. I took a hold of his neck to remove him from her lap, but I apparently didn't know my own strength. I felt the bones in his neck crumble and his windpipe collapse like someone crushing an empty water bottle. He made a wet gurgling noise before sagging over the picnic bench when I instinctually released my grip. The woman abruptly dropped the hands that were covering her face and her large green eyes popped open. She caught sight of me in the shadows, and I thought she was going to scream by the way her brow furrowed and her lips peeled back from her teeth. "Shh, shh, it's okay," I tried to calm her before she alerted anyone else. The man was dead, and we certainly didn't need to draw unwanted attention to ourselves. I reached my hand out to help her climb over the now very deceased man that lay partially across her right leg. "I'm not going to hurt you, but we need to go." I urged her to come with me, but she just stared, dumbfounded. Is he dead?" she stuttered, reaching for my hand even though she didn't know me from Adam, but I guess she would. Considering I crushed his windpipe, I would say so. I took her hand and led her back out to Canal Street. I could finally see her full figure now. She was a tiny thing, probably no taller than 5 feet, with the brightest orange hair I had ever laid eyes on. It looked as if it had been braided back in pigtails, but the right side had been yanked free and draped her shoulder in waves. Her clover-green eyes studied me under the street lamp, probably evaluating whether or not I was safe to be around. She fumbled to keep her red flannel closed over her chest. All the buttons were now missing. I watched as her gaze wandered from my heavy jacket to the gloves on my hands. She probably thought I was on my way to a robbery. "Aren't you hot?" she blurted, her brow still knit in concern. I assumed she was in shock. "Miss, I'm always hot," I responded, fanning myself with my jacket. If she only knew how serious I was. "Sorry, that was rude of me. Thank you. Thank you for saving me." Her words trailed together as she averted her gaze from mine and favored her clunky booted feet instead. "No problem. What the hell is a girl like you doing out on Canal Street at," I checked my wristwatch, "almost midnight?" It was rather odd that any woman was out at this hour all alone with nothing for protection. "Does it sound like I'm from anywhere around here? I have no idea what this city is like." It was then that I really heard her accent. She was not from around here and oddly sounded a lot like the guy that ran the Irish pub down the street. "Touché. We don't need to stand around here talking, though. If someone sees us and a dead body, they're going to ask a lot of questions." I took her hand once again. "We can't just leave the scene of a crime," she protested, trying to take her hand back. "You really want to wait for the fuzz to arrive and then have to answer a bunch of questions as to why that man's throat is crushed? Because I won't stick around for them so they can arrest me. Besides, one less scummy fuck on my streets. He was going to rape you." The last part of my sentence caused her to draw in a sharp breath. I don't think it had even occurred to her that he was trying to do such a thing. Based on the look of the knife and the fact that I could now see blood running down her partially exposed chest, he wasn't going to leave her alive. "You coming?" I waited while she let everything sink in. I just hoped she made the right decision, and I wouldn't have to try and force her to come with me. "Yeah, let's go." She let me take her hand again and led her back up Canal Street the way I had come. I needed to get her back to a well-lit area where she was safe. I could tell the magnitude of the situation had just hit her, and she began to shake. I took my jacket off silently and draped it over her shoulders as the tremors increased. "You're going to be okay. You'll realize soon enough that this city isn't always forgiving. But good people do exist," I reassured her. I don't know if she believed me or not, but I wanted her to understand that I would keep her safe. I felt compelled to. For whatever reason, I had to make sure that she got home in one piece. "Awesome. Another bar." She scrunched her nose up as I held the door open for her. "A safe bar. My friend Nate owns and operates it." I followed her through the door and took her to a table in the far corner away from everyone. I held my fingers up for 2 beers as we passed Nate bussing a table. He returned shortly with 2 ice-cold stouts. I offered her one, and she studied me for a minute before taking it from me. "I wasn't going to drink tonight. Avoided tequila for over an hour. Though, I feel like I need this right now." She talked past me as she cracked her bottle cap up against the side of the table and took a long swig. "Maybe it'll calm your nerves." I uncapped mine and started to drink. I was going to go home, but this seemed like it was more important.
Maybe. Thank you again."
She paused in her gratitude and gestured her hand towards me. I wasn't sure what she was waiting for, but then I realized I hadn't given her my name. "Adam. My name's Adam." I would have extended my hand to shake hers, but I figured she had had enough of my lava hands for one night.
"Violet,"
she smiled slightly, taking another swig of her beer. She seemed like she was warming up to me. "Well, Violet, this is your first night in the Big Easy?" I finished my beer and threw my hand up for another.
"Yeah, fresh off a plane just a couple of hours ago,"
she nodded, finishing her own beer. I changed my number of fingers in the air to 2. "A couple of hours ago, and you were wandering down Canal Street after midnight? Why?" She hadn't been here that long, and she had already almost been killed. "Welcome to the dark side of the city, Violet."
"I just moved here. Got in tonight, met my friend at the Cat's Meow. I wasn't really up for partying after a goddamn 19-hour flight, so I got her keys and address and was going to take a cab home. Only I got caught up in my stupid head, and before I knew it, I was almost at the ferry and figured it would be a waste of time to go back and find a ride. She sighed as Nate brought over two more beers. He unsubtly winked at me as he wandered back off to the bar. I guess it was lucky I was out there. It really was luck, or something of that sort. I cracked open our brand new beers and slid one over to her.
It was. You saved the damsel in distress.
She had a funny look on her face as she locked eyes with mine for a moment. I always wanted to be a knight in shining armor. I laughed and she laughed uneasily.
Missy's going to be worried about me.
She was talking past me again as she drank. Is that your friend? I asked, trying to keep her calm in the conversation. She looked at me warily for a moment before responding.
Yes. We were friends back in Belfast since we were 8. She moved out here 10 years ago and I finally decided to follow.
She answered me, finishing her second beer. Let's get you home then. I finished my own and stood from the table.
You don't have to take me home. I'll just get a cab.
She denied my help as she slung her bag across her chest and stood up too. No, no. Let me get you home safely. I urged her, but she still looked undecided.
How do I know that you won't hurt me?
She asked, pulling her bag closer to her body. I mean, I did save you once already. Not the type of guy to play with my food. I responded and quickly regretted it. Her eyes were wide, one eyebrow arched as she stared at me. Poor choice of words. What I mean is, I went out of my way to help you. Why would I do that if my plan was to hurt you eventually? I could have done that back down there at the ferry. The wording of this sentence wasn't much better, but she didn't seem as tense. I'll make you a deal. I'll leave my phone and wallet here with Nate. I'll take you home, and when you get in safely, you can call up to the bar and let Nate know. I can get my stuff then, and all is well. It was a bit of an unnecessarily long-winded plan, but I wanted Violet to trust me.
Okay, I guess you can take me home.
She caved, but she still looked scared. I couldn't blame her. I took my phone and wallet up to Nate behind the bar and explained what I was doing. He thought it was a rather elaborate plan for trying to sleep with someone when I explained to him why I was taking her home. He felt like a dick, which he was, but I didn't hold it against him. Okay, everything is set, Nate has my things, and now we can get you home. She handed me my jacket and I helped her outside.
I don't know if I have enough money for a cab now. We're a good bit further away from Missy's than I was before.
She spoke up as we stood by the curb. I do. I held up a few $20 bills. Address?
667 Seguin Street,
she recalled. I held my hand out as a cab slowed and a man stuck his head out of the window. Where to? 667 Seguin Street, I responded, opening the door for Violet. She climbed in, still visibly shaken, and I entered behind her. The cabbie set the clock and we headed off towards the other side of the Mississippi River.
Violet Eve. I think this one is me. I tapped on the window of the cab. The house looked like the one in the pictures that Missy sent me, even in the dark. The cab pulled up to the curb and Adam got out to get the door for me. Thank you, I responded meekly and climbed out of the cab, holding my bag closely against me.
I'll wait here while you get inside. Make sure to call Nate so I can get my things back. Adam smirked at me and handed me a piece of paper with a phone number on it.
Okay, I agreed, not making eye contact with the man. He seemed nice enough, but I was still so apprehensive and I had been holding in ugly sobs for the past hour. I turned to walk up the stairs to the house when Adam called out to me.
Can I see you again?
I thought about it for a moment. I don't know what interest he had in me or why he'd even want to keep in touch with me after he killed a man in my defense. That would just draw unwanted attention. But he was so sweet to me. He saved my life and didn't even know me from Adam. It was funny now. I don't know. You go up to the bar often?
I glanced over my shoulder. I can only give him a solid maybe right now. Almost every night. I DJ up there on Tuesdays and Thursdays, he replied, removing a stray lock of hair that had fallen over his eyes. His hair was just gorgeous.
Then maybe we will meet again.
That was the only answer I could give him. I hurried up the stairs and fumbled with the keys in the lock before finally opening the door. Night, Violet, I heard him say as the door to the cab closed and sped away down the street.
Violet, where the hell have you been?
Missy greeted me as soon as I opened the door. She was sitting on a huge sectional couch, flanked by the three C's and a few other women that were all pretty much dressed the same.
I got lost. It's a very long story, and I just don't have the strength tonight, miss.
I tried to make myself look as tired and sickly as possible. I clenched the top of my shirt closed so she couldn't see the blood that had dried on my chest. I wanted a hot bath and a cup of tea and then to sleep as long as I possibly could.
Well, get some sleep, Vi. Your bedroom is in the back and your bags arrived while we were still out. You even have your own bathroom. I'll see you in the morning, yeah?
Missy got up and came over to give me a hug. The other women didn't even really seem to notice me as one lit up what smelled like a joint and began passing it around. Night, Missy. I trudged off to the back bedroom and locked the door behind me. Then the dam broke. I tore off my flannel shirt and held it in front of my mouth as I cried. My whole body shook with equal parts fear and rage. Since I had been here, I felt like the only person that really gave a damn about me had been this Adam guy, and I had just met him. Missy hadn't even called to check on me. I tried to suck the tears back, but that only made the crying worse. My sobs were almost silent as I blindly rifled through my messenger bag for my phone, but I couldn't seem to find it. I angrily dumped out the contents and spread them out on the floor. My journal, keys, cigarettes, the new lighter I bought when I got off the plane, my lip balm, tons of pens, and a bag of sour jellies. No fucking phone. There was no way I was without it. I knew I had it the whole time because I used the GPS on it. I had finally stopped crying and wiped the tears from my rosy face, fixed my hair in the mirror, and then poked my head out the door.
Miss, do you have a house line?
I called out into the living room.
Jeremy has one at the end of the hall,
she called back, and I stepped out of the room with the slip of paper Adam had handed me. I picked up the receiver and dialed the number, waiting as it rang on the other end.
Oh, Neil's Bar and Nightclub, this is Nate speaking.
Nate picked up the phone after the fourth ring. Hi, I hesitated nervously. This is Violet. I was just with Adam up at the bar.
Oh, hey, Violet.
Adam got you home safely? He asked. I could hear him cleaning glasses on the other end. He did. You can give him his wallet and phone back. I have a question, though. Maybe my phone was at the bar, or Adam had seen it and Nate could ask him since I clearly didn't have his number.
Shoot,
he responded. I could hear him set down a glass and pick up another with a clink.
I lost my phone somehow, and I was wondering if maybe you've seen it.
I hoped he'd say that he had already had it behind the bar.
No one has brought anything up here, and I already bust the tables and didn't see anything. When Adam gets back, I can ask him, though.
That was kind of him to offer.
That'd be great. Kind of hard to function nowadays without a phone,
I joked. Don't I know it. Can you be reached at this number? Nate asked as I heard him switch the handset from one ear to the other.
Yeah, it's my roommate's house line. Thanks, Nate. Two good people in the city so far.
No problem. Have a good night, Violet.
He hung up and I set the phone back down. I aimlessly sauntered back to my room and immediately drew the hottest bath I could stand. The cut on my neck seemed pretty superficial and wouldn't need stitches, which was good since I couldn't afford them. I cleaned myself up in the sink before climbing into the tub and fully immersing myself. I let my hair down and felt it ripple around me in the steaming water. I started to cry again. I knew that I would. Stuff was just way too much for me at that moment, and I surfaced, hanging myself off the lip of the clawfoot tub to get my bearings.
Mom, what the hell am I doing?
I asked to no one. I was miserable without her. And to top it off, I was still convinced that she was murdered. My mother wasn't a drunk, and there was no way that she should have lost control and collided with that tree. Someone set her up somehow, but no one would listen to me. Maybe the brake line had been cut or something, but it was no accident. I could feel it in my gut. She had been having issues with a certain medical facility whose name she wasn't even allowed to mention because it didn't exist, at least not as far as her department went. It had to have been them. I knew it.
Vi, there's a phone call for you.
I could hear Missy standing outside the bathroom door.
It's open,
I hollered, and she cracked the door, bringing me the wireless phone from the hallway. Maybe Nate had found my phone after all.
Hello?
I took the phone and slunk back into the water after Missy closed the door. Hey, Violet. It wasn't Nate. It was Adam.
Hey, did you find my phone?
I really hoped he had.
Yeah, do you want me to come bring it to you?
Adam asked. He sure was eager to see me again.
Not tonight. Maybe we can meet up somewhere tomorrow. I can get it from you then,
I suggested instead. I just wanted to finish scrubbing the city's bad first impression off of my skin before getting some sleep.
Sure, want to meet back at Nate's bar?
He wasn't pushy. That's good.
That works.
What time? I yawned. I needed to get out of the bath and into bed before I fell asleep and drowned. Nate opens the bar at 11, so then? That way there isn't a bunch of noise and distraction going on.
Adam suggested a mid-morning meetup.
What would he not want us to be distracted from?
I was just coming to pick up my phone.
That sounds good. I'm going to go finish my bath and drag myself to bed before I drown. I yawned again.
Yeah, you do that. There was a strange tone in Adam's voice.
Night, Adam.
I bid him goodnight.
Night, Violet. He hung up and I sank back into the water to finish my bathing. It was so goddamn hot. The room was sweltering and I thought I was going to pass out. I felt like my hands were on fire as they gripped the sheets. Waves of intense heat were washing over my body, undulating hot air into my face so that I choked. I couldn't decide if I was asleep or not, but I assumed that it was just another nightmare.
No more.
Wake up, Violet. Wake up. I tried to make my lips work to form the words aloud, but I was already awake.
No more. No more fire.
I heard myself blurt as I writhed in bed from the excruciating pain. I felt like I was being incinerated from the inside out.
No more.
I belted, and instantly I felt a wash of cold fill my body up till I was almost shaking from the chill. I pulled my blankets around me and dragged myself out of bed over to the window. I wrenched the curtains open to find that it was already morning, and it was incredibly overcast outside. I wiped the sweat from my body with the sheet and went into the bathroom to freshen up before digging through the bag of clothes for something to wear. When I was satisfied that I didn't look like something the cat dragged in, I left the room to find at least 7 girls asleep all over the living room, and Missy in the kitchen cooking breakfast with a strange man.
Morning, Violet. Jeremy made us bacon and eggs.
Missy brought over a cast iron skillet full of scrambled eggs and fat slices of bacon.
Thank you.
I responded, but Jeremy made me anxious. He was already dressed to impress this morning with a 3-piece suit, slicked hair, and fancy tie. His skin was deeply tanned and his hair was dark, but they were a stark contrast to the light gray of his eyes. He could have easily been Missy's father with his age, but who was I to judge?
You are most welcome. I'm so glad that Missy is going to have someone here around the clock when I'm gone.
He gestured for me to take a seat right next to him.
Oh, do you travel?
I asked, taking a bite of my bacon.
Yes, I'm a manager and a promoter as well as an investor. I travel all over the world, and I can't always take Missy with me.
Jeremy sipped at his black coffee. It was nice of him to open his home to me, but something about him still made me uneasy.
I'm glad to be here. I needed to get away.
I had just put a forkful of eggs in my mouth when Jeremy's response made me choke.
Missy told me about your mother's accident. I'm so terribly sorry.
Jeremy lamented, but something about his response was disingenuous. I also hadn't wanted Missy to go telling everyone about it. I didn't want the pity, and I didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Well, I have to go meet a man about a phone that I lost last night, so if you both will excuse me, thanks again for breakfast. I grabbed a bottle of water off the counter and rudely exited the kitchen and straight out the front door. I hadn't meant to be so curt, but just talking about the accident made me want to fucking scream because it wasn't an accident. There wasn't really any money on my debit card, and I had very little cash, so I guess I was walking to O'Neill's. At least it would give me time to cool the anger that had started to pool in my fists. Didn't want to knock anyone out now.
June 5th, 2016. Adam Bodine. I got to the bar the same time Nate did. He let me in the back and poured me a soda before getting to work on opening the place up.
You think she's gonna show up?
Nate flipped over one bar stool after another in front of the long mahogany bar.
If she wants her phone, she will. She's gonna need it being in a new city with only one friend.
I propped my feet up on the table and drank my soda.
Two if she counts you.
Nate laughed, implying that I had already laid claim to her.
She's cute, I agreed. That accent really made it, too. But I wasn't looking for anything serious with everything else that had been going on. She wasn't a girl that you slept with one time and never spoke to again. She couldn't be a one-night stand for me.
Not that now would be a good time to ask her out after what happened last night. Nate had a point there, too. Someone knocked on the front door and Nate opened it to reveal Violet, dressed in cut-off shorts and a black shirt with what appeared to be a band logo on the front.
"Morning, Violet. Adam's over there."
Nate pointed at me and I waved. She had her hair down today, and I could see how incredibly thick it was, like a horse's tail. Despite being a redhead, she had not a freckle on her body, save for a few light ones speckled across her nose.
"You have my phone?"
She slung her bag on the table and waited impatiently.
"I do. You're welcome."
I pulled it out of my front pocket and slid it across the table. Violet snatched it and started going through it like I was going to leave lewd pictures somewhere on her phone.
"You want to go for a walk with me? Maybe get some coffee and beignets?"
For someone who didn't want to date, I sure wanted to take her out places. She had this strange hold over me.
I don't know.
Violet looked down at her phone.
Got other plans? I figured she and her friend Missy would be up to something with her just coming into town.
Not till later this afternoon,
she spoke quietly, still going through what seemed to be her text messages.
She did try to call me.
Missy? I asked. Violet wasn't totally part of our conversation.
Yeah, she was still up when I got home. I thought she hadn't called to check on me, but she did. I just didn't have my phone.
Violet finally stuffed it in the front flap of her bag and stood from the table. You leaving so soon? I lifted my feet from the table to stand with her.
Didn't you promise me beignets? I've never had them before.
Violet gave me the most genuine smile that I had seen since we met. I began to walk her towards the door. I know just the place.
These are like eating the sweetest, fluffiest clouds. And the coffee?
Violet licked powdered sugar off her fingertips before taking a sip of her coffee. Yeah, they really are wonderful. I laughed. The expression on her face was sheer joy as she took the last bite of her beignet and finished her coffee. Where do you want to go now? I asked, walking closely alongside her.
It's only noon. I don't have to be back till 3.
She shrugged, checking her phone. Good, then there are two things I want to show you. I heard her down the street towards the spot I had found her the night before.
You know, I have no idea where you found my phone.
Violet questioned me, suddenly, as if she knew where I was taking her. I'm going to show you. I took her hand and jaywalked across the street to the exact same spot we had met the prior evening.
I must have lost it in the struggle.
It dawned on Violet when she had actually lost possession of her phone. I walked back by here last night on the way home and I found it. Notice anything strange, though? I stepped under the awning where the tables were and waited for it to sink in.
Where's the body?
Violet furrowed her brow and looked from me to the spot where I had killed the man that had been attacking her. It wasn't there when I came back here last night. There's no police, no police tape, no chalk outline. The body's just gone, and I don't think anyone even noticed it was here. I pointed out the lack of any sort of police presence.
Somebody did, because the body's gone,
Violet pointed out. She was right about that. Someone had to have found the man's corpse, but why had they taken it and not reported anything to the authorities? Let's get out of here, just in case. I grabbed Violet by the elbow, but she jerked her arm violently away from me.
I'm sorry, she sputtered, backing away from me as her chest heaved up and down.
No, I'm sorry. I should be more thoughtful. I wanted for her breathing to level out before I urged her to follow me in a different direction. I was going to take her to my home and introduce her to Henri. He had a few things to say about the situation that I had gotten myself into with her the night before, though I hadn't been very specific. I figured he'd change his tune when he met her.
Violet Eve. Seriously, what's with the gloves?
I joked with Adam as I pointed at the black ones that came up just past his wrists. I have sensitive hands. He mockingly defended himself.
Or you're an X-Men.
I laughed at him. The gloves really weren't that odd to me. Everyone had their own style. Here we are, the Crescent City Shaman. Adam held the shop door open for me like a gentleman, and we both were greeted with the scent of sweet woods and smoldering resins. Adam, come here and taste this. A handsome, dark-skinned man with short red locks was rolling something between his hands before he handed it to Adam, who popped it right in his mouth without even asking what it was. That tastes like strawberry ass. What is it? Adam scrunched up his nose and let his tongue dangle over his full lips. I noticed then that the middle of his lower lip was pierced with a silver ring. It's supposed to make you virile, but I don't want it to taste too bitter because of the horny goat weed. He went back to rolling herbs in a fruit paste and then in powdered sugar. Well, that's not what I need right now. Henri, this is Violet. Adam introduced me and Henri's head snapped to where I was standing. She the girl you saved last night, Captain America? Henri studied me intently. Yes, she is. Adam kicked up in front of the bar and left me to look around the huge shop. There were rows and rows of books, herbs, totems, dolls, and a large assortment of occult items all around me. I had always been interested in the magical, metaphysical, and supernatural. All my stories had those themes. We had witchcraft shops in Ireland, but voodoo was something new to me entirely. Nice to meet you, Miss Violet. Have a seat and I'll make you something to calm your nerves and help with that jet lag you are still feeling. Henri began snatching pinches of herbs from the glass apothecary jars behind the bar. It was almost set up like an ice cream parlor, but instead of ice cream, there were magical herbs and resins. Nice to meet you too. I climbed onto the stool next to Adam and sat down. You're Irish, hmm? Always wanted to go over to the UK and see the sights. I hear Stonehenge is beautiful. Henri continued to mix and mash herbs before smearing what looked like a guava paste onto his cutting board and began rolling it all together. Yeah, I'm from Belfast. I nodded, watching him expertly make the squishy herbal candies.
You both from here?
I figured as much, but I wasn't very good at making conversation. Henri is, but I was adopted. They think I was born here, but they aren't sure. Adam answered.
Adopted? I hadn't expected that.
My mother worked for an adoption agency for years. She saw Adam and just fell in love with him. After me, the doctors told her she couldn't have any more, so Adam was her miracle baby.
Henri smirked, winking at Adam.
Brothers, your mother must be a very lucky woman. I smiled. I love to see blended families. Mine never seemed to work out that way.
What about you? Any siblings?
Henri asked, finally rolling up at least a dozen or so herbal candies before piling them up inside a parchment-lined box.
I had a few step-siblings over the years, but none blood. My mom remarried a few times.
I nodded, taking a loose piece of candy that Henri offered me. I popped it in my mouth and chewed. It was certainly guava.
And where's your mom?
Adam asked me. Instant rage, but I quelled it.
She passed away about 6 months ago.
I drew my lips into a thin line.
I'm so sorry. I had no idea.
Adam looked as if he felt terrible for even asking.
Don't be sorry. Not your fault.
I assured him that it was all right. I was going to have to learn to control my anger.
Is that what brought you over this way? Her passing?
Henri kept asking more questions, and I was oddly okay with that.
Pretty much. My best friend since forever moved down this way about 10 years ago. I had no one left over there anymore, so she insisted I come here. I explained how I had even ended up in New Orleans in the first place.
She's worried about you. You haven't been sleeping well. Henri handed me the box of candies.
Does it show on my face?
I was sort of embarrassed that he had even noticed.
No, your face is perfect. I can sense it in your energy field. It's weak. Having nightmares?
Henri started mixing a new batch of something as he spoke to me.
Well, I do. I do have nightmares.
I was too baffled to deny it. Adam was now looking at me oddly as he chewed on a tea tree stick.
What about?
Henri apparently had no boundaries, but his intuition was spot on.
Stuff?
I don't usually remember. I just know that I generally wake up terrified. I tried to skirt the answer, but Henri caught my attention.
I want to try a little thing with you.
He dusted the powdered sugar off his hands and started going through the dusty bottles on the shelf behind him. He grabbed a glass orb that swirled with an indigo liquid. How it got in the seamless globe was beyond me.
What is that?
I wondered what the orb was used for.
I call it the Destiny Diviner. It's this fancy thing I whipped up a few moons ago. Very intense stuff.
Henri came around the counter with the globe in his hand and stepped right in front of me, offering it for me to take.
This is going to divine my destiny?
A snow globe? I was skeptical.
She may not be ready for that,
Adam sneered. He started to laugh as Henri pulled the globe into his chest.
I know the first one didn't work, but this one is different. I made sure I got it perfect this time.
Henri waved Adam off and turned back around to me.
Just try it. Maybe it will give you some insight into your dreams.
Henri urged me to take the orb.
What could it hurt?
I lifted my shoulders in indifference and reached out for the Destiny Diviner. My fingers had barely grazed the glass when I felt like an explosion went off in my brain. Images of war and famine, of pestilence and death whirred around in my head. Leathery wings, fire, bloodshed. These images were unlike anything I had ever seen. Flashes of children, happy children that grew up to be monsters. Fire rained down from the skies and the seas ran red with blood, and then I caught a glimpse of myself. I wanted to let go of the orb, but it just kept showing me more terrifying images. I was in the middle of a cemetery, knelt down in front of a gravestone as I laid a flower I couldn't identify on the plot. Then I seized up. I watched as my body began to twitch. I was alone, having some sort of seizure, and no one was there to keep me from choking on my own tongue. I flailed back on the ground and started to scream, clawing at my face. I could tell that I was in immense amounts of pain just by looking at myself, but I physically didn't feel a thing. When the seizing finally stopped, I witnessed myself roll over so I could finally see my face. I screamed, almost dropping the orb as I snapped back to reality. Henri had torn it from my hands before I could let it go, and I just stood there drenched in sweat, eyes wild with fear.
"Keep that thing away from me,"
I whispered, raising my tone at the end as I batted Henri out of my face. What kind of fucking game was he playing?
"What did you see?"
Henri's eyes were wide with wonder.
"You're a sick bastard. I don't know how you did any of that. Was there something in the candy?"
I began to gag at the thought of it being laced with LSD or something worse. Before Henri could answer me, I had turned heel and ran out of the shop with Adam calling my name as I fled. Adam Bodine.
What the hell did you put in that candy, Henri? I had never been this furious with my own brother, but Violet had been through enough already.
I didn't put anything in the candy, Adam. The diviner worked!
Henri seemed elated, but I could tell that the more he thought about it, the worse he felt. Even if it worked, whatever she saw, it scared the hell out of her. I was rather furious at Henri. I'd probably never see her again after this.
I wish I knew what it was. Did you see the look on her face?
Henri widened his eyes as far as they would go and flared his nostrils. It was close to the face Violet had made, but not quite. It was terrifying, whatever it was. I'm going to see if I can catch up to her. I had already swung my long legs to the ground and lifted the hood on my jacket before snatching another tea tree pick from its cup.
Tell her I'm sorry, man. I didn't know it would work that way.
Henri's forehead was crinkled as he spoke.
Will do.
I nodded and slipped out of the door. The street was filled with panhandlers, street vendors, and people just hanging out in front of the shops. I stopped a couple people and described Violet to them, but no one had seen her. I wasn't quite sure how that was possible, because on this side of the Mississippi, she basically stood out like a sore thumb.
Hey, Jackie, you see a girl about yay high, long curly red hair, cut-off shorts, green eyes?
I stopped when I saw my cousin standing outside of a convenience store.
Looked like a little leprechaun walking around here?
Jackie laughed as he recalled her. Where did she go? I wanted to find her before someone preyed on her foreign sensibilities.
Up that way. She looked like she'd seen a ghost.
Jackie noted that she had been fearful as she charged by.
Thanks, Jackie. I slipped him a cigarette and prepared to jet.
Hey, Adam. Find her quick, okay? Something just don't seem right today. Jackie had the Bodine genes for foresight, just like Henri.
I will. Thanks again.
I nodded and took off up the street. I don't know what he felt, but I could definitely say that something was off. My hands were hotter than usual, and I was surprised the gloves were retaining all the heat. The intensity had increased when Violet had taken the orb from Henri. It was probably just a coincidence, but I had fire hands, for Christ's sake. Regardless of the searing heat I was feeling, I needed to catch up to Violet and try and calm her down before she got herself into trouble.
Violet Eve.
I just ran. I kept running. I even tripped over someone's fruit stand and almost busted my arse in the middle of the street. There were plenty of people to see my comedic panic, but embarrassment just wasn't something I was feeling at that moment. I made it far enough up the street, and the throngs of people that had been outside of the shops and businesses had thinned out to almost no one. The sky was even grayer now in the mid-afternoon, and it made the streets look almost post-apocalyptic. I stopped at a crosswalk to catch my breath, thinking I had put enough distance between myself and the Crescent City shaman, when a very robust woman approached me.
"You're not from around here."
She circled me, one perfectly thick eyebrow arched as she studied my frame.
What gave it away?
I forced a smile, but she made me a tad nervous with how scrutinizing she was being.
Ah, not even from the country,
She cocked her hip to the side, still looking me up and down.
No, Ireland. I really wasn't in the mood for conversation. I just wanted to get back home, as weird as that sounded, and try to forget what I saw when Henri handed me the globe.
It's not safe for tourists on this end, and you just scream foreign, or weird, whichever.
She scolded me, and possibly insulted me as well.
I didn't really ask to come down here. I was brought down here.
I huffed, getting a little irritated.
Someone kidnapped you?
She seemed shocked, yet intrigued.
No, I was with a guy. A guy I just met last night. Maybe it wasn't the best decision. I rambled as I thought about how stupid I was being. Either way, I just want to get home.
You look a bit on edge. Why don't you come inside and sit for a bit? I can do your hair for free, press it out. You look like you need some hair therapy.
The woman pointed to the sign behind her. Medusa's mane, hair and nails.
Are you Medusa?
I wondered if it was just a cute name or her real name.
You can call me Mama Medusa. It's how everybody else knows me.
She winked and gestured for me to follow her into the salon.
I guess I could sit for a minute. I need to gather myself anyway.
I followed her into the shop, and she led me past three women, all chatting away as one got her hair done. She sat me in an empty seat and draped a cape around my shoulders.
So,
tell me what happened. Mama Medusa grabbed a spray bottle and began spritzing my hair with water to tame it.
Long story short, I just moved here, like last night moved here, and it has been eventful, to say the least. I met a guy and somehow managed to lose my phone while we were out. We met up today so he could give it back to me because he had found it, and somehow I ended up down here and... let's just say I didn't expect what happened.
I sighed as she picked up a blow dryer and a round brush to blow my hair out.
Well, what happened? Don't leave me hanging.
Manusa belly laughed, turning the dryer on low so she could still hear me. He took me to this shop called the Crescent City Shaman, his brother or whatever. I went to tell the rest of the story when Medusa shut off the dryer and cut me off.
You were with Adam?
She locked eyes with me in the mirror.
Yeah, you know him?
I didn't expect for everyone to be so tight-knit here in the States like we were across the pond. Him and his cheating brother. Medusa pursed her lips.
Well, Henri's the reason I look so freaked out. I think he gave me lace candy or something. I could still detect a hint of guava on my tongue.
Henri doesn't mess with that sort of stuff. Strictly green. But his magic has been known to freak out one or two people. What trick did he perform on you? Medusa went back to paddling my hair straight.
He handed me this glass ball called the Destiny Diviner, or some such fuckery, and I had just eaten this de-stressing candy when I took it from him. I don't know what the hell I saw. I wasn't sure I wanted to give away too many details.
Henri has a knack for tapping into things he shouldn't be tapping his ass into.
Did what you see scare you?
Medusa had finally finished with the dryer and was now taking a flat iron to my hair. I hesitated for a moment.
Yes, it did. I don't know what game they are playing, but I don't want to be part of it.
Those boys used to get themselves into all sorts of shit. Adam is the younger one, and being the only boy of his kind on this side, he got himself into a lot of trouble.
You mean white?
I knew she was hinting at the color of his skin. This area was predominantly African-American and Haitian. Adam was really the only light-skinned person I had seen.
Yeah, the kids picked on him when he was young for it, before they realized that he understood at least part of the struggle. He's a good guy, orchestrating an art show through the community center for the kids and trying to get the older ones off the street through music, art, and sports. He still gets hell from time to time, but don't we all? No one seems to be safe from hatred. Medusa finished my last section of hair and draped my smooth tresses over my shoulders.
I feel that. I really meant what I said. I had always been empathetic since day one, and more that ability caused me pain.
The problem is Henri. He gets himself into all this trouble in the magical community because he plays with things, science and magic. There are a lot of clergy that don't like what he does.
Medusa continued to babble as she took the cape from my shoulders.
Well, I'd have to agree. I didn't very much care for it either. I wasn't lying. I believed in this sort of stuff, but had never admitted it to anybody. The dreams I had been having, the things I had been seeing. Something else was at work. I could feel it.
Thunder clapped overhead and shook the building. The lights flickered and the ladies on the other side of the salon started to murmur to one another.
Stay away from them, okay?
Medusa seemed to take the thunder as some sort of sign.
Yeah, okay.
I agreed as I heard someone talking rather loudly outside of the shop. I was now having second and third thoughts about befriending Adam and Henri. Then he appeared in the open doorway.
Hey!
Adam called out.
How in the hell had he found me?
I ducked in my seat as Medusa placed her thick frame between me and Adam's line of sight.
What do you want, Adam?
She crossed her arms over her chest, prepared to kick him out if she had to.
Have you seen a redhead running around out here? Green eyes, little freckles on her nose?
I could see Adam's elbow bobbing around Medusa's body.
Nope, can't say that I have.
Medusa's response was flawless. I would never have known she was lying had the lie not been about me.
Are you sure?
Adam's voice had a tone to it, a tone that said he didn't believe a word Medusa said.
Yes, I'm sure. You don't think I'd notice a girl like that running around out here?
Medusa swirled her finger in the air.
I think you're hiding her.
Adam sounded a bit mischievous.
Excuse me, are you insinuating that I'm a liar? She ain't here, Adam.
Medusa put her foot down.
Then move and let me see what it is that you're hiding.
I know you, Medusa. I can tell you're lying just by your stance. I could tell that Adam had come further into the salon.
Stop right there, Adam Bodine. Get the hell out of my shop with those accusations.
Medusa backed up a bit closer to me.
Come on, Medusa. We are practically family. If you're hiding her, I don't know why. I just want to talk to her and make sure that she's all right.
Adam sounded like he might truly be concerned about my well-being.
Fuck off, Adam. I'm not going to tell you again, she spat, tapping her sandaled foot on the tile floor.
But Adam didn't listen. He just kept walking closer, and soon he would be right on us. With his size, he could easily move past Medusa and find me sitting there, huddled up in the salon chair like a scared child. I needed to stop being such a weenie, but I wasn't ready for the confrontation. Medusa tried to fight him, but Adam just laughed as he brushed past her to check the chair that she had been trying to block. All he would find was an empty seat.
proving that Medusa had been right all along.
Adam Bodine. Anything? Henri asked as I walked back into the shop, my head held low.
No, gone. I threw my hands up and came to sit at the bar.
Call her,
Henri suggested as he wiped down his workstation. I don't have her cell number, just her roommate's house line. I'm sure Violet will warn them to screen her calls. I was a bit bitter that I hadn't caught up to her.
And no one saw that flaming red hair fluttering up the street?
Henri was just as surprised as I had been.
Just Jackie, I responded. I was sure that Medusa had been hiding her, but there had been no one there but patrons and another stylist.
Jackie called me, said something felt off to him, like a big storm coming.
Henri informed me as another huge clap of thunder shook everything up and down the street.
Yeah, it's called thunder. I laughed. Not that I didn't believe in their intuitive abilities, but I was still somewhat of a skeptic.
Seriously, Adam, when will you just let yourself believe? With all that you have seen, you are still so cynical.
Henri berated me. I shrugged.
Your hands, for fuck's sake! Henri poked at my gloves with a spoon.
Yeah, those. My lava hands. Good luck ever getting a girl with these, unless they're into that sort of thing.
Maybe I'm cursed. I only half believed that.
I'm beginning to wonder if it is some type of curse, or track that has been laid. It's nothing like I've ever seen before.
Henri went back to cleaning up his counter.
Well, if you figure it out, let me know. I'm gonna go take a shower and maybe get a nap in before work. I stretched and hopped off my bar stool.
Where are you spending tonight? Henri always wanted to know where I was, like a good big brother.
Some party this entrepreneur is throwing. Nate got me the gig. It's like a high-end rave or something. Think a Coachella, but with less art and more strippers. I rolled my eyes. It was good money, just not my crowd.
Have fun with that. Henri waved me off as I headed upstairs.
I had to take cold showers all the time now. Hot would surely kill me. I'm pretty sure the bathroom filled up with more steam now than it would have ever in a hot shower. I watched as the ice-cold water cascaded over my hands, temporarily quenching the lava-filled veins that crept through them and past my wrists.
Henri was right. How could I not believe in the supernatural, the otherworldly? I was looking right at it. And Violet. What was it about her that caused me to want to rescue her so badly?
I had this intense draw towards her and this compelling sensation that forced me to make sure that she was safe, no matter what. I didn't know where she was at the moment, but I hoped wherever it was, she was okay.
I got out of the shower and toweled myself off as best I could without charring my white towels. I should have bought black. Shaking my hands dry was pretty much the only thing I could do, but they never stayed wet for long anyway. I hadn't even had a chance to throw my boxers on when my cell phone began ringing. Nate's number burned hot on the face of the phone, and I tapped the screen to answer.
Yellow! I flounced back on the bed as I held the phone with my shoulder.
Adam, are you ready for tonight? There are going to be so many fine ladies and free drinks. This is the best gig ever.
Nate sounded overly excited.
Well, I won't be talking to any ladies, seeing that I will be behind a DJ booth all night.
My hands were now dry enough to slip my gloves on.
I'll make sure to send plenty of strippers your way with a song request for them to dance to.
Nate clicked his tongue and laughed.
Thanks for that. I'm going to get a nap in. Will you call me in like 2 hours and wake me up?
I patted my hair dry before finally slipping my boxers on.
Of course.
Nate sounded way too chipper.
Thanks, Mom, I joked as I lay back on the bed.
Anything for you, son,
Nate responded with a sugary voice.
I'll see you tonight. When I get the address, I'll text it to you.
They better send it to you in enough time so we can get set up before the party starts. I yawned. Sleep had been eluding me lately.
They will, trust me, Nate tried to reassure me.
All right, nap time. Talk to you in a bit. I hurried to get off the phone and Nate got the hint. Tonight was going to be great, or so I kept telling myself. A fat check, beautiful ladies, free drinks, and good publicity. Yet for some reason I couldn't stop thinking about poor, scared Violet.
That's all for tonight's stories with the Archives. I want to apologize if my character voices and accents are all over the place. There are a lot of characters in this series, and they're all unique in their own way. Sadly, I am but one individual who does not represent the entirety of people on this planet, but I'm trying to do what I can. My hope is that you guys will love the characters and story while ignoring my lack of good character voices. But until next time, lock your doors, salt your windows, and remember, it's okay to sleep with the lights on.
Surprise! You thought I was finished, but I'm not, because I forgot to mention something. The Occult Archives is no longer on Patreon. I have switched to Buy Me a Coffee, because it's easier for me to work with the controls. People can just leave me tips. I decided to charge less for my perks. And you can find us there through... Hold on, I gotta look at my webpage. Okay, so it's buymeacoffee.com/theoccultarchives. No, I lied. Just kidding. Ignore that. It's buymeacoffee.com/occultarchives, because they wouldn't let me use the for some reason. But I also have a new supporter that it's time to give a shout out to. It says Brittany on here, but I'm pretty sure it's Brittany Blackwell who signed up. And I thank you so much, because you're the first new supporter I've had in a while. And everything's all crazy now since I switched from Patreon to Buy Me a Coffee. But I think in the long run, it'll work out much better for everybody. And it's much easier for me to use since I am not electronic savvy at all. So now this episode is actually over. And if you didn't lock your doors or salt your windows, you should probably do that now. And like I said, it's okay to sleep with the lights on. I love you guys.